The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Welcome back to the Joanne O'Riordan Podcast with me, Joanne O'Riordan. This week we have an incredibly special guest in Emer Considine, Irish rugby legend and old Gaelic footballer for Clare back in the day. She's going to talk to us all about her time as a rugby player, how she managed to get involved in the game, and her time as a GA player with Clare, and more importantly, her sister Ailish, who is an AFLW star down in Australia. Tune in and enjoy. Emer, how's it going?
All's good. All's very good. Delighted to be on. Thanks so much.
No, thanks. Thanks very much for joining us. You're our second rugby player, but I think you're actually our first like dual player who's played possibly everything under the sun.
Well, I'm glad I'm the first for something on your podcast.
No, it's not too bad. How have you been keeping during this incredibly weird time at the minute?
It was good. I actually enjoyed lockdown. I know a lot of people would be like, oh God, it was awful. But I think when it happened, like it was in the middle of Six Nations. It was the middle of like Seachtain Gaeilge. It was the middle of like just correcting my mocks in school. And it's always a mad time anyway. And then like COVID happened and it was like, oh my God, I had no school. I had no rugby. I had nothing. And it was just like a complete flip of my life as it was. So I think at the time, I really enjoyed it because it gave me like a few like moments to breathe and take it all in. But I think as it went on, obviously, then you start to miss everybody. And it was more so everybody than everything that you missed. I missed playing with the girls and training with people. And I suppose that's kind of made me realize why I play, that it's like I obviously am very competitive, but I was like, God, I really love the social aspect to all of it. But it's great being back. Like I know it took a while for us to get back, but we've a few weekend camps done now, and it's great to be back playing with people and training with people and actually getting to gym with people again. And because it was so long there that you were one, either working from home, or two, we weren't back collectively as a squad. So even our gym sessions there, even for like July, August, even September, were still on our own. So you couldn't even push it through with your weights because you're like, oh God, what if this dumbbell falls on me? So I'll just stick to the weight that I know I'll be able to lift. So like little things, it's back bit by bit. And obviously like very exciting times, the fact that we do have fixtures in the calendar, which is something that's bizarre because nothing really, I think what it's taught us is like just go day by day because you don't know what's going to happen the next week. So it's exciting.
It was completely wild. Like as you were saying, like you were kind of slap bang in the middle of the Six Nations, like, and like you teach, like you're constantly surrounded by people. So to effectively just be surrounded by one person, you know, for like 6 months, like that must have been super weird for you.
Yeah, it was like I was lucky at the start when it all happened that I was in Clare, and like I live in the middle of nowhere, so was so lucky to be there and be able, like my 2K radius was lovely. It was nature, it was getting out and going for walks. Yeah. And my sister came home from Australia, so then I had a bit of company for the first bit. And then when I was able, I came back up to Dublin then because my fiance Dean was on his own up here. So it was a nice mix then as well, though. It was a nice mix to have, like, be at home in Clare with my family, who, like, I never really see because everything's just so busy. And then similarly, it was lovely to be in Dublin with Dean because we live near the Phoenix Park. So that was, like, our sanctuary during the lockdown. And he plays football for Clare as well. So, like, we just pass each other in the road going training, or literally in the passing in the night is what we are, because like I'm up for gym the next morning, he's gone home to Clare for training on a Wednesday, and it's like it was lovely to actually have the time to just have time, full stop.
Yeah, you're probably like staring at him going, I didn't realize how annoying this thing you do is because I'm not around you all the time.
Sorry, do you want to say that
can
again?
You hear me?
Yeah.
I was going to say you were probably like staring at him going, oh my God, this thing you're doing is really annoying because I barely see you.
That's it. We found out so much about each other, you know, because we had never spent that much time together. It was really make or break, and we're still together anyway. So it's a good start.
That's what you want to hear. That's what you want to hear. So like, I suppose take us back kind of to like the start of like your sporting career. Like when you started, like you were playing kind of Gaelic football, like was Gaelic football like your thing until you found rugby, or were you kind of aware like that you kind of were interested in both sports and you'd play both them for as long as you possibly could?
Well, I suppose I'm from West Clare, so like rugby really isn't a thing in West Clare, and like I can't say that I ever grew up wanting to play rugby for Ireland, because I didn't. One, I didn't know there was women's rugby. Two, we would have just watched rugby on the TV. You know, when Munster were winning in Heineken Cups and that, we would have obviously followed Munster, but I didn't know the rules or I had no real interest in it. Growing up in West Clare, I suppose football was your only real sport in the community, that and athletics. So they were my two sports underage. So I ran with Kilmahill AC and played football with Kilmahill. So I think they were a good kind of base to have anyway with the athletics. I didn't really like cross country. I was more of a track and field, and I would have done kind of all of the events, and I was decent at them all, but not like amazing at one in particular. So like I would have done like, let's say, the 400, the hurdles, the long jump, high jump, and been an average enough at them all. So I suppose it kind of set me up for, I suppose it benefited me with football and every other sport that I actually went on to play. When I was 14, I took up camogie just through a friend who was playing on the county football team with me. And from then we started playing camogie with Kilmaley. So underage, it was just football and camogie, and maybe a bit of soccer when we decided to play soccer. We played a bit of volleyball, you know, whatever was on in the village at the time. If there was some sort of a sport, we were doing it. And I think that probably helped in the transition to a new sport. The fact that like I had played, so I wasn't just a footballer, like I had played, well, I tried to play soccer, I'd played volleyball, done athletics underage, you know, so like I had a kind of a broad range of sports under my belt before I actually went and transferred over to rugby. And I was pretty late going to rugby. Like I was 23 when I first started playing rugby. So at that stage, I was pretty established in the football and camogie terms, playing senior for both. The year that I left, Clare Camogie had just got to the league Division 1 final against Kilkenny, and we lost it. So like we were doing pretty well. I'd been in the intermediate All-Ireland with Clare, you know, so like I'd been at a pretty good standard with both, but I was living in Dublin, and I think it was just very hard to do. One, it's hard to do dual when you're living in the county, but it was very hard to do dual when you're travelling the 2.5 hours, 3 hours in traffic. I think that was probably one of the main things that made that decision for me, was that I just couldn't, you know, I wasn't enjoying it. It was I got to a stage where I wasn't enjoying the road, and then you're picking up injuries because you're in the car so long, and it wasn't worth it, I suppose. And rugby just came at a really good time where I just got approached and I said, you know what, I'll give it a go. And well, here I am. So
it's clearly worked out.
It has, yeah, it has worked out. And like I said, I never planned to play rugby for Ireland. It wasn't a dream of mine, but I'm happy that it's worked out.
Yeah, like I was going to say, like, I mean, all your kind of skills, as you were saying, that you've got from all the different sports that you played, like which one did you find was like the most applicable kind of in rugby? You know, which one were you like, okay, I can do kind of this, so I think I can play this position. Like, did you have like a vague idea when you went in, like where you wanted to go or what skills you could possibly use to, like, in a rugby context?
I suppose Gaelic football was the main one. And a lot of the girls had transferred over from Gaelic football, or even if you look at past teams, a lot of the kind of successful women's rugby team, they obviously joined later in life too, but had come from GAA background. I suppose it was just the ability to catch and run. And I suppose there are two things that Gaelic football teaches you, you know, the invasion side of things and trying to avoid tackles. I suppose the athletics was handy in relation to fitness and in relation to speed, but I didn't really know. Like, I honestly had watched rugby, but I didn't know what it required until I went playing it, and hadn't a clue. Like, genuinely had not a clue of what to do. And I obviously started off playing sevens. And like, perfect example of that is, yeah, when I first went to, I was just kind of thrown in the deep end, really, which was, I suppose, the best way to learn, because I got taught by the best coaches in the hardest environment. But our first tournament was in San Diego, and I had never tackled anybody. I had never played a game. I'd only just done drills and passing and catching and hitting tackle bags. And when it came to the game, I remember our coach at the time was, he said, "Will you go play nine?" And I couldn't understand the concept of playing nine when there's only seven on a sevens team. Like, you know, it's something is like, I knew I watched rugby, but I never realized that nine was a scrum half and that nine, you know, yeah, there was it was called the number nine. Like, I wasn't clued into rugby at all. And I was just so confused. And it was just, that was just the start of a long line of confusion for me. But it took time. And I had the skills, the same as a lot of other girls. Like, there's so many girls on the sevens team that transferred over from other sports, and those sports each have a different skill, and each makes each player, you know, different and makes them the player that they are. And I'm lucky that I did come from a Gaelic football background, that I suppose you're ready-made athletes. And, you know, we can see it with the AFL girls, we can see it with the rugby girls that transferred over. You're ready-made, and even though we're not professional, we train as professionals, we act as professionals, and we can see that in the way that I suppose us footballers are slotted into a professional setup in rugby. You can see it the way that the AFL girls are just slotting into the fitness element, and that they're already conditioned going over. So I suppose, you know, we're ready-made athletes in the GAA, even though we're amateurs.
Yeah, like that's what we were saying. Like, a couple of people were like, it's professional by nature, like not by name. Like, that's kind of the only difference with the GAA. Like, growing up, like when you were younger, like in Clare, like you're whole family environment sounds like nice and hectic, like a really good kind of like supportive, and kind of like, as you were saying, like Elish also plays. So like when you were growing up, like was it a competitive household? Were you constantly like using each other as like standard setters, or was it just like, oh, Elish does one thing, Emer does another, like so be it, you know what I mean? Like, as long as you're both enjoying it, that's what matters.
Yeah, like I said, we both didn't aspire to be where we are right now. We were happy just playing our football. And like, we were both very different players. Like, even Mam would say it, that like I was the one out midfield who did all the donkey work and kicked the ball into Ailish, who just happened to be really skillful left and right in the right place at the right time, and slot like five goals in a game with very minimal work or effort required. We were very different players, and like, she has completely changed.
So like
the
my
game.
Siblings. Yeah. So like my siblings, like Cassie be like, I did everything.
Yeah, it's true. So I suppose, like, we have an older brother as well, and he was obviously the one who started us off with sport. You know, he was 9 years older than us, so he had two younger sisters, and we were living, like I said, in the middle of nowhere. So, you know, he had to keep himself entertained some way. So he was kicking a ball at us when we were barely able to kick or catch, you know. So we can thank him for that, but I was useless. Like, I hated it when I was younger. I was so bad. Ailish was always the really sporty one, and I was like not into it at all. And I think I just got forced to go along with Ailish, and then that's how I ended up going to like cool camps and going to football training. But I really wasn't, like Mam often says, that like I was useless at the start, and I just did not want to do sport. So I'm glad I was pushed a little bit to do it, because things might have worked out a little differently had she not given me a push. But she, like, Mam was great. She our neighbors used to joke that she was super glued to the wheel of the car, because she'd be like bringing me to camogie training, bringing me to football training, bringing me to piano, bringing me to both of us everywhere. And like, you know, the years where Ailish and I weren't the same age group, so let's say she was 16 and I was 17, which meant Ailish had to go to under 16 training, I had to go to minor training, so there was two separate times for two separate sports, two separate teams. So like, the neighbours joked that she never left the road, that she literally lived in the car. And it's true, she didn't. You know, she was always bringing us places, and, you know, it's a serious amount of dedication, you know, what she did to bring us all those places. Yeah. And like, it has obviously worked out for the best, and she can be, and, but like, it's a serious amount of dedication on her part as well. Not just like, obviously we had to go out and train, but she just waited for us while we were doing that. Yeah. So when you think of it, like, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah, even like on the days where you're not feeling like training, like to see your mom just in the car waiting for you, like it's kind of like a guilt trip in kind of a way, because you're like, oh, all right, mom, I'll go.
It is. And like, she was tough on us too. Like, I remember we went down to Tralee, or was it, no, Ailish was playing with Tralee IT when she was in college, and we were below in UCC, and like, okay, you know where UCC is, but for Clare, that's really far away. And yeah. Mam like hated driving to work. And like Ailish went, we went down, and I think Ailish's team were winning well, and Ailish decided to just take a bit of a back seat and just, you know, she's like, oh, we've done enough as a team. I'm just going to get the ball and fling it in. It was a Camogie game. And she was midfield, yeah. And she just decided to like not play. Like she just was like, oh, the game's already won. I don't want to bother myself here. And Mam swore she would never go to one of her matches again if she played like that. And it wasn't that like Mam was, it wasn't that like Ailish wasn't good. Like if Ailish just wasn't talented, Mam would be like, okay, you're just not good enough. Whereas she just oozed with talent. She just lacked in the, that day she just didn't want to do it. And that was the thing that annoyed Mam the most, was like, I'm never going to give out to you for not doing your best. But when you don't do your best, that's what really annoyed her. So she did set standards, but it was only, she expected what she knew we were capable of. And I think that's the difference too. She was tough on us because she knew we had the ability to be good. But that was a perfect example of Mam getting back in the car. And she was raging with Ailish because she was after driving all the way down to Cork. And then Ailish decided to take a little bit of back seat. But I'll never forget it. It just kind of sums Mam up, that she's, it's tough love, but it's only because we're capable of it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. Like, and I was going to say, like, even like flash forward, like the pictures and like all the stuff when you went to Australia to see Ailish play in the AFLW final, like the first time. Like, I mean, that's a tight knit family. Like, I know my mother would be like, oh, I'll just tune in on the TV and ring you after. Like,
yeah,
that's how tight we are.
I think it might be slightly psychotic or crazy. Like, I think other people might say crazy, but yeah, like, I think Ailish just, she said it to Mam, like, oh, if I get to the final, will you come? And Mam not thinking that one, Ailish would get game time, two, that Ailish would, that they would get to the final. Not knowing anything about Adelaide and not knowing their success and how much they, like, they had been in, I think, 3 grand finals out of 4 or something similar or something like that. So, you know, we didn't realise how good they were. So then when it was actually an old man from our village actually had been out to Adelaide in, I think, maybe Christmas time. January, February, maybe, and he had met Ailish. He had arranged to meet her, and he's the same age as our granny, so he's in his 80s, if not even 90. Really fit man, but he went out, and I think Ailish guilt tripped Mam in a bit by saying, you know, well, you're not. Mam's like, oh look, I'm old, I can't go to Australia. And Mam's like, Ailish, like, you're not old compared to this man. And I think that's the reason that she was like, oh God, she's right. I'm not, like, compared to this fella. If he can go to Australia, I can go to Australia. Because she doesn't really travel anywhere. She's never really gone places. Yeah. So it was a mad week because Ailish got cited for a tackle, a high tackle. So we weren't even sure what the punishment in the AFLW, because they're not paid, the men just get fined, but the women, they miss a match. So that would mean missing the grand final. So we were like, oh God, do we book the flights? Do we not book the flights? Because what if we book it and she's not actually playing? So we had to wait until her hearing was over. So that was the Tuesday. And then once we heard that she'd got the all clear, we booked our flights on the Wednesday and we flew on the Thursday. Like, mental, so mental. Please. But I think we would have regretted it had we not gone. You know, it was such an amazing moment with like 56,000 people in the crowd, full, packed in Adelaide, in the Adelaide Oval. Like, that's stuff you dream of as a female athlete. And I think the AFLW are very forward thinking in that. And they put the money into the AFLW teams and players, and they're getting the rewards of it now. So, but I just think, the booking the flights was mad, a really last minute decision. But I think the three of us, I think she was delighted to see the three of us, but also, like, I don't think the three of us would have missed it. Like, Mam and Keith travel, they used to travel the length and breadth of the country to see us play, but now they can say they've traveled to the other side of the world to see us play. So, we're very close.
Literally the other side of the world. I was going to say, like, you mentioned how kind of forward thinking like AFLW is. Like, when you kind of came back from the grand final, like, did you kind of come back with like a renewed sense of like optimism and hope and kind of like, not pressure, but like, were you kind of like looking around being like, look, this is what we can grow it to if we build it correctly? Like, did it kind of not inspire you, but were you a bit more determined, I suppose, to get maybe the women's game kind of more on the map when you came back?
Yeah, like I think like they're still semi-pro, so like they all are doctors, teachers, nurses, the students, you know, they're all working part-time as well. So like it's a similar to what we get in relation to like Irish rugby, you know, we're all working at the moment. And I think it opened up my eyes to like on the grand final, the tickets were free. So it was free entry to the grand final. So the AFLW purposely took a cut, knowing that it's not going to have financial gains. But what turned out was a full packed Adelaide Oval. And I think if you open it up to people, they'll fill it. And people will go, people want to see it, people will support it. If you put it on television, people will watch it. If you put the money into it, it will be worth it. And I think that has taught me that, like, if you're willing to take a risk on something, which the AFLW did, they took huge financial risk for the first 2-3 years of the AFLW. And they're still not making a huge amount of money. The fact that they had free entry to that grand final as well, you know, they're willing to take the risk, and it's paid off, and it is paying off. And I think that has taught me that, you know, put the games on, put them on TV, open up a big stadium, people will fill them, and it's proof of the pudding that will happen.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I mean, it is just incredible to see like the draw that they have, you know. But were you like, when you kind of went over to see Elite, were you ever thinking, oh God, I'd love to give this a go? Or are you like, no, forget it. Like, I'm not traveling to the other side of the world again to go play like semi-pro. Like, are you like, you're content at where you are at the minute as well?
Yeah, like I always like, it's in the back of my head, obviously, you know, as a rugby player and as an AFL, as a Gaelic footballer, it's the perfect combination for AFL because of the tackle and the physicality in the AFL game. Yeah, like I did think about it. I'm not going to say I didn't think about it, but then you have to think like the grass isn't always greener. Like I have a lot going for me here. I'm happy. Like you need to take a look at yourself and be like, why am I always wanting more? And obviously there's more in relation to my own game. I obviously want to be better and faster and fitter, and I want to be as good a rugby player as I can be. But then I was like, just stick with what, sometimes more isn't more. And I did think about it, but then I took a look at where I am at the moment, and like I'm pretty content with where I am, and I'm happy with where I'm going. And like there was a lot to lose, you know, like I've like started even working with Teach Care and working on air, like my kind of media profile was growing too, and I enjoy that side of it. I enjoy that side of the game. And like you'd lose a lot. Like I know I'd gain obviously living on the other side of the world, being a semi-pro athlete, with the sunshine. I suppose the sunshine was the big thing. But then you just have to look at what you'd lose here, and you have to weigh up the options. But like I'm never gonna say never. Like I won't say no forever, but at the moment I'm pretty happy with where I am, and I'm enjoying rugby and loving being part of the squad. So I'm happy for the moment.
Yeah, like I suppose we can go back to your rugby career like a little bit. Like you were saying, you started like your first rugby sevens game was in like San Diego. Like how did you like kind of progress like from there? For people who like don't know, like, you know, what was the pathway to get onto like the 15s? Like, were you always content with the sevens with the aim to go on to a 15s, or did the 15s kind of just kind of not come out of nowhere, but were they like, oh, you should be plucked up, and you were like, cool, I'll roll with it?
Like it kind of came out of nowhere in a way. Like I started with sevens and did 2 seasons with sevens, and I'm glad I did start with them because, you know, it develops your basic skills, it develops your pass catch, your tackling, your ruck efficiency, like things that, you know, you might do 20 times in a game of sevens, but in a 15s game you might get to pass the ball twice, you know, or you might get to tackle twice depending on what position you're in. And then as a winger that doesn't happen very often, so I was glad that I did play sevens to develop those skills. But still looking back, like I'm still learning. Like this is obviously I was 23. Like I'm not playing a long time. So, you know, I'm 29. It's not that, it's only 6 years, and I played 2 years of sevens. I took a year out, and then the rest have been playing 15. So like, I'm not that established when you actually think about it, but so I'm still very much learning the game. But I'm glad that I started off with sevens to learn those basic skills. But then the 15s game is a completely different game. And I'm also glad that I'm playing that because it allows me to understand the game. It allows me to understand the moves and, I suppose, manipulate players and manipulate defences and work on that. So I think the two really went hand in hand together. And I'm glad that I've, I suppose, done it in that order. But I didn't ever imagine playing 15s. Sevens was enjoyable until a stage where like it's semi-pro, but I was working full-time. A few girls were working full-time. Yeah. A lot of people were working part-time and it was kind of manageable, but it just got to a stage where it wasn't manageable anymore. And I took a step back from the sevens and I didn't really plan on going into 15s. I just got a call about going into pros, which I was like, oh, this is great, getting to play for Munster. Like, I hadn't even played club at this stage. I played seven, yeah, and I hadn't played a club 15s game. I hadn't played interpros, and I hadn't played obviously for Ireland. So I kind of did it backwards, that I started up at the top and then kind of worked my way back down. But yeah, it was great that way. But started off with Munster then, and I at this stage hadn't played a club game, so played three games with Munster. So I played, what, 390 minutes of games. And then that December, like, that was it, you know. Christmas time came and I got an email from Tom Tierney wondering would I go into Irish camp on the, like, the following week. And I was like, no way. Like, I'd never imagined this was possible. And I had only three games under my belt. Like, I hadn't played any more rugby than this. And then I got my first cap in the first game against Scotland over in Scotland. So like, I had three games played and I started on an Irish team. Like, so it was bizarre, like really bizarre, but like with everything, I feel like I've been thrown into the deep end. And okay, like, I'm not going to say I did well. Like, looking back on those first U sevens games, I cringe. And even with that Six Nations game, you know, I didn't know 15s rugby. I was athletic. And that's about it, really.
Yeah.
But I've learned a lot. And that year was a great year to join the Six Nations squad, because we obviously had that World Cup in Ireland. So we trained the whole way through the summer. So like, what happens usually is there'd be just a Six Nations and then you might have Novembers. But there's a huge gap in between. Mm. But this was really great because I had the Six Nations and then we were training all through the summer ahead of that World Cup in Ireland. So it was a great year to have. The experience of training at that level for that length of time was really, really good.
That was part one of my episode with Emer Considine. Tune in next week where she will talk to us about her career as an Irish rugby legend, what it's like to actually play rugby for Ireland, and the future for Irish rugby, given that the Six Nations is currently going on this day. Don't forget to tune in to the Six Nations and see the Irish women absolutely smash the whole thing. Even though England have already run, there is still a lot to play for the Irish women's national team, given that the World Cup is coming up quite soon. So don't forget to tune in and enjoy. And don't forget to follow us at Big Red Bench and at @JoannaWarr_OX. Cheerio.
The Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's Red FM.